Good morning. We're going to call this meeting of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, May 7th, and the time is 8:02 a.m. Members present are Representative Reback, Representative Thompson, Co-Chair Drummond, and myself, Representative Hannon. We have a quorum to conduct business. Before we begin, I'd like to remind everyone to silence their cell phones. And today our recording secretary is Lori Rowland, and Madison Truitt is our LIO moderator assisting with teleconference support. Thank you to both of you. My staff committee aide today is Arnold Liebelt. If you have notes for others, please pass them through Arnold. We'll be hearing one resolution and a governor's bill today. We'll first hear House Joint Resolution 19 to support the 2020 decennial census. It is my intention to hear the resolution and set it aside to our next meeting. We will also hear for the first time House Bill 69. This is the governor's bill to repeal the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission. It is my intention to have the bill presented and then to hear invited in public testimony as time allows. Anything from the committee before we begin? All right. First up is House Joint Resolution 19. To present the resolution, we have Representative Zolkowski and Liz Medicine Crow with the First Alaskans Institute here in the room. We also have Mike Walsh with the 4-Acre Group online. Representative Zolkowski, and maybe it's your staff that are coming to the table, so I'll quit reading my script and look up. And if you could please introduce yourselves for the record and begin our presentation. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Co-Chair. For the record, Tiffany Zolkowski, representative for House District 38.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Grace Singh, staff to Representative Zolkowski.
Thank you.
Again, good morning, Co-Chairs Hannon and Drummond and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to present House Joint Resolution 19 before you this morning. I'll talk first a little bit about the importance of the 2020 decennial census. As we heard in the joint hearing of the Tribal Affairs and Community and Regional Affairs Committees on Tuesday, April 23rd, the 2020 decennial census is vital to Alaska. Required in Article 1, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution, the census aims to count every resident in our country at the location where they live as a basis for sharing resources and determining political representation. Dependent on federally established formulas tied to census data, Alaska receives $3.2 billion in federal funding each year across 70 programs. In a time of state and local budget constraints, maintaining the amount of federal investment is crucial to Alaska's economy, communities, and programs. Organizations across public, private, and nonprofit sectors rely on funding allocations determined by the census information, illustrating the importance of accurate count data. Every uncounted individual results in a loss of roughly $3,000 in federal funding for Alaska per year, equivalent to a loss of $30,000 in federal funding for Alaska over a 10-year period for every person who is uncounted. This results in reduced essential services like health, housing, road repairs, and education. It compounds harm to local and state budget gaps, and it results in improper enforcement of voting and civil rights laws. For these reasons, it is imperative census data is accurate, and we have done everything that we can to ensure Alaskans, communities, and the state is ready to be counted. In partnership with the Alaska Census Working Group, a public-private partnership of local organizations in our state, the Special Committee on Tribal Affairs sponsored House Joint Resolution 19 to highlight the importance of the decennial census. The resolution also urges the federal delegation to fully fund the census, encourages the state to prioritize outreach to ensure the accuracy of data, and invites local governments to engage in the count by establishing local complete count commissions. With significant geographic, language, and connectivity barriers, Alaska is considered one of the most difficult states to count in the country. The difficulty of counting Alaska is even greater in the 2020 census, with the Bureau's decision to eliminate three things: the notification mailing to PO boxes, translation support for materials into native languages, and transitioning to a mostly online response system. With the Census Bureau launching its count in my home district in Tuxuk Bay on January 21st, 2020, it is vital that Alaska's leadership at all levels of government and organizations across the state prioritize an accurate count before starting conversations about how the data will be used. In conclusion, because the 2020 decennial census is so important to every community, citizen, and organization in Alaska, the Special Committee on Tribal Affairs sponsored the introduction of HJR 19 and unanimously moved it out of committee. Thank you for the opportunity to present before the committee today, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. And before we take questions, I'm going to just have the record reflect that Representative Klayman arrived at 8:04 and Representatives Jackson and Christ-Tompkins at 8:06. Members of the committee, questions?
Madam Chair, if I may add.
Please.
I did not anticipate that when we did the joint hearing on the importance of the decennial census that we would spend 2 hours talking about the importance of data, especially as somebody who loved telling stories and wanted to be a journalist and somehow found herself in politics, talking about enumeration and census tracts and the importance of federal funding formulas was not something that felt like a sweet spot. But I will say, after spending time working on understanding the importance of the census to Alaska and the opportunity that we have to elevate the conversations both within our community, within the legislature, and advocating and providing support to the congressional delegation for full funding of the census, this felt like a very important topic to continue, and I appreciate the committee considering it this morning.
Thank you, and I want to just express on the record our thanks for the leadership you demonstrated on this, and I, for one, am deeply concerned. And I know it's not directly tied to your resolution, but have you checked to see whether we've put any money into the budget, or is there discussions around a capital budget appropriation to help come up with money for local census committees?
Madam Chair, I am unaware of any resources that we might have put in with, as you know, the operating budget in conference committee, whether there are resources to provide support for outreach at the front end. From what I understand, the governor has put in some resources for the census work following the count, but I am unaware of any additional resources to help develop community readiness around the census.
Could you expand on ideas of how we can do that besides passing your resolution? Because, of course, we need to do that.
Madam Chair, I am not a census expert, and so I might defer to our colleagues on the line and invited testifiers on opportunities to specifically within communities to prepare for the census. From what I recall from our joint hearing, having conversations and letting Alaskans know that it's safe to participate in the census, I believe the state's demographer, I think I'm referring to that to him correctly, Mr. Hunsinger, had talked about the privacy, the absolute privacy that that census workers adhere to, the lifetime oath that they take to protect the information that they collect during the census process. I believe there are several years of jail time as well as $250,000 fine if there's any breach in confidentiality or data. So it's important that Alaskans know that their privacy is of utmost importance to the census and the Census Bureau. And so I think the importance of passing HJR 19 is really to elevate conversations around what the census is, how the information is used, so Alaskans understand that those resources tied to that information do trickle down into our communities and do have positive impacts on local and state budgets.
Thank you. Anyone on the committee? We do have a couple of invited testimonies, so we'll turn to them, see if the committee wakes up and has questions. Or maybe you did such an extraordinary job in your committee that we've resolved all our questions and concerns and just need to get this to the floor for a vote. Ms. Medicine Crow, please join us at the table. And for the record, introduce yourself and your affiliation.
good morning. Katala'es, good people. Nunkwai Gai Gikianans, Sinudinan Kiagan. Nunkwai Gai Gikianans is my grandmother, Mona Jackson. Ganahek Hinudi Chan Kiagan. Ganahek was my grandfather. Hathlagadagan, he was Slinget. Tommy Jackson, senior of Kihkwan. Stathkawas Hinudi Aukiang. Stathkawas is my mother, Della Chini. She's a weaver and a teacher. Bill Chini Hinudi Khatkiang. Bill Chini is my father. He makes his home in our village of Kihkwan. Lagunai Hinudi Khadkildikiang. Lagunai is my Haida name. Elizabeth Medicine Crow is my English name, and I'm the president and CEO of First Alaskans Institute. Gatsakas Gustu Dikwalagan, I am of the Eagle people, Chichkitne Hino Uj Ijong, and I am a Chichkitne woman. Our crest is the hummingbird. It is an honor to be before this committee this morning. Ganesh Chish Hawa to the sponsors for allowing me to be here to testify. Thank you so much.
Do you have a statement about? Yes, please proceed. Thank you.
Ganesh Chish Hawa to the co-chairs and to the committee. Thank you for your time. As I stated, my name is Liz Medicine Crow, and I work for First Alaskans Institute. We are a statewide Alaska Native nonprofit organization, and our vision is progress for the next 10,000 years. So you can imagine what our strategic planning sessions look like. And when we think about our responsibility to this place, it is thousands of years old. And when I think about the purpose of Alaska working along with the federal government and with the tribal governments in this state to continue to steward the relationship that has gone on here for so many years, I think about how we as Native people and as non-Native people who now call Alaska home can actually work better together and taking the strengths of all of our entities. That's an opportunity that we have here in Alaska with the census, for example. We need to be able to make sure that we are counting all Alaskans. I did some simple math because that is not my forte. And and I was thinking about that number that Representative Zolkowski just shared. Alaska takes in about $3.2 billion. Over the period of the 10-year decennial census, right? You guys have heard this number before. So that goes down to about $3,100 per person per year, so $31,000 per person over the course of 10 years, as was stated earlier. Well, let's just think about this in terms of one household. If that is one house with three children, a mom and dad, and maybe one grandparent living in that household, that's a loss of $186,000 per year to Alaska for a family of six. So that's almost $2 million lost for one decennial census period of 10 years. That's just one family uncounted. And when you think about the things that you're already struggling over within the state budget, when you're struggling over a decision about whether you can cut $25,000 from a program or $100,000 from a program, which may in fact be a life-saving amount of money for those programs and those services and to those citizens, then this number is extremely significant. I was also reading earlier an article that was in the Juneau Empire just recently, and a number was shared by one of their tribal partnership specialists. And I wanted to read the way that she spoke about this fiscal impact on Alaska. And she said, and this is a quote from the article, "Because the census is used to determine distribution for federal funds, every 1% of Alaskans, That's about 7,500 people. How many of those people are in your districts, right? 7,500 people who don't respond to the census equates to about $22 million less per year for the state. $22 million. And using that number from the 2010's 36% non-response rate, so the people who didn't complete the census, translated to a loss of $798.93 million per year. That was nearly $8 billion lost over the course of 10 years to Alaska, because 36% of our population did not complete the census. So from a pure dollar standpoint, it just doesn't make any sense to leave those dollars on the table, especially when we're facing our own fiscal and budget constraints. So when I think about why it's important, I think about what those dollars actually mean on the ground. In my community of Cake, our water line just went out a couple weeks ago. And when our water line goes out, everything stops, right? And it took a little bit of work to get it working again. It started working again. And then a few weeks later, the line actually broke going across one of our creeks, which goes to serve the rest of the community, the other half of the community. Well, the other half in community holds the only gas station, holds the only grocery store. And that gas station has a convenience store to it as well. And then also our largest lodge or hotel accommodation are all on the other side of the bridge, including my father's house, our family home. And so my father left Cake about a week ago because there's no water on our home, which is up at the top of the hill. So this is unplanned for, this break. It's going to take weeks to fix, and they need the funding to fix it. In order to get that funding, it's going to have to come through federal and state programs, most likely the federal programs. Those federal dollars are allocated for these kinds of things through the census. So in order to be better prepared in the future, we have to have accurate counts. We have to have accurate counts for our education funding that comes out of the Department of Education. We have to have accurate counts for our housing dollars. It's also incredibly important in the way that Alaskans decide to fill out their forms, because especially for our Native community, if you're in, say, a mixed race household, the head of household that's listed, whatever the head of household's race is going to be how that house is counted. So for us as Native people, sharing with our community that it's really important for that head of household to be listed as Alaska Native, because that helps ensure that those funding programs specifically designated in that unique government-to-government federal relationship, which is a political relationship that the federal government has to the tribal people of this country, that number is important because it helps to designate how that federal funding is allocated on that political status. Again, that's how that tracking of those race numbers gets used in terms of establishing the equitable distribution of funds across the country, but in particular for Alaska Natives, those are actually political rights, not racial rights. And I think it's really incredible, or really important, incredibly important, that people understand that that's how it's linked up. So I wanted to come here on behalf of our organization and the work that we do to help ensure that our community is at the table and able to participate in decision-making that's impacting our communities, and share some of how these things really affect us on the ground and how it also affects our neighbors all the way across the state of Alaska. Ganesh Chishawa, for your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Drummond. Okay. Thank you, Liz, so much for coming.
Yeah.
I would love to get the numbers straight, because we're talking about a lot of numbers and obviously a lot of people. And I'm doing some back of the notepad math.
Yeah. Well, I was doing that too.
That's right. Who is, I guess it would be the demographer who has the numbers.
Is it Eddie Hudsinger from the state?
I believe so.
Yeah. The U.S. Census Bureau has also shared a whole bunch of data about the impacts on the state. Mm-hmm. And then George Washington Institute published a whole series of data points on the impact for Alaska specifically. Mm-hmm. So that $3.2 billion number comes from the George Washington Institute study, George Washington University, I mean. And if I recall correctly from reading that fact sheet, that essentially, that number is essentially counting 55 federal programs whose funding allocations come into the state of Alaska.
Is that the $3.2 billion?
Mm-hmm.
Annually?
Yeah, for the 55 federal programs.
Okay.
And I know that Mike Walsh is also on the line as invited testimony, and he's been really sinking his teeth into all of these numbers over the past few years, so he'll be able to illuminate a few more of them.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Jackson.
Thank you. Is there a fiscal note?
There is no fiscal
note. Okay.
Right. This resolution does not currently ask for an appropriation, nor, yeah, so there's no fiscal note.
Mm-hmm.
Which is my underlying heartburn.
The challenge resolution has never carried fiscal note.
I know. But if I were queen for a day, I'd give it some money. Any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Medicine Crow, and we will see if Mr. Walsh out there in telephonic land.
May I say one more thing?
Please.
You asked a question earlier to Representative Zolkowski about different ways that people could participate. The census is busy setting up complete count committees across the state. In previous census, those were essentially a statewide complete count committee, and then all those people would kind of try to get the message out in multiple different forums, but now there's complete count committees being set up all over, so groups of people who are really interested in outreaching to their specific group of communities or region, they can create their own complete count committees and really get that outreach going. The simple fact is the census has no money, so part of this resolution is really important because it's urging our delegation to fight for that full funding in DC, and then it's also urging our administration here to get behind that complete count committee process. And tribes can do that on a government-to-government basis. There's an opportunity for the census and the state and the tribes to really partner. And I think that that would be a really wonderful message coming out of the state legislature is full support of this bill.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Walsh, are you out there in telephonic land?
Yes, Representative Hannon. Can everybody hear me okay?
We can hear you just fine. So if you'll state your name and your affiliation for the record, and go ahead.
Yes, thank you so much. Good morning, co-chairs Hannon and Drummond and members of the committee. I'm Dr. Mike Walsh. I'm Vice President of Public Policy for the 4-Acre Group, and I also provide staff support for the Alaska Census Working Group, which the 4-Acre Group convenes. I'm joined by Lori Wolf, 4-Acre's president and CEO, but I'll be testifying for both of us. And I'll see if I can't weave in some answers to some of the questions that I've heard so far into my testimony. So we were honored to testify before the joint meeting of the House Special Committee on Tribal Affairs and the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee just 2 weeks ago on the importance of a fair and accurate census in Alaska's 2020 count. As a quick reminder, the 4-Acre Group serves as the state nonprofit association for Alaska and the nonprofit capacity building organization for nonprofits and tribes across the state. Central to our work is giving voice to nonpartisan public policy issues that affect Alaska's nonprofit sector, which directly employs roughly 44,000 people across the state. And they're providing services that touch virtually every Alaskan every day. So nonprofits, both big and small, new and mature, rely on census data to do their work. And it's our public policy work generally and our focus on making sure that every Alaskan is counted specifically that brings me here today to speak in support of House Joint Resolution 19. So for the record, on behalf of the 4-Acre Group, and the Alaska Census Working Group, again, which is convened by the 4-Acre Group, We urge the committee to vote in favor of moving House Joint Resolution 19 out of committee. We get one chance every 10 years to get this right, and HJR 19 will certainly help with that. So we again thank the committee for holding a joint hearing with your colleagues from House Special Committee on Tribal Affairs. And at that hearing, you heard from a number of my colleagues, one who is mentioned already, and Eddie Hunsinger, our state demographer, and others that are connected with Alaska Census Working Group, on the importance of a complete and accurate census in Alaska, and how those $3.2 billion federal dollars are allocated to dozens of federal programs based on census data. We also heard about some of the specific enumeration issues facing Alaska, especially the hardest kept communities in rural and remote rural Alaska. And, you know, we were really pleased to be able to include that figure, about $3.2 billion, in our 2018 report on the economic impact of the nonprofit sector on Alaska's economy. So no community in the state goes untouched by the federal programs that operate with census-driven funding. That data is used to determine allocations for, as we've heard, roads, marine transportation, housing programs, water, wastewater systems, for education, substance abuse prevention and treatment, just to name a few. And we're pleased that HJR 19 addresses the importance of participation in the 2020 census at all levels of government. We really believe that this resolution supports the growing efforts within the state to ensure that complete and accurate count. And we really appreciate the language that encourages active participation and coordination by the state. We also support the language encouraging local governments to establish their own complete count committees, or CCCs. Creating those local CCCs is really, and we've heard from Liz Medicine Crow, it's an excellent way for tribes and local governments to coordinate and cooperate with the U.S. Census Bureau in a more formal and really a more effective way. These local committees utilize knowledge and local knowledge to build trust within the communities and educate residents on why the census matters, and hopefully to promote trust and encourage full participation. On the federal level, the good news is that in our multiple visits with our congressional delegation, the 4-Acre Group and the Alaska Census Working Group really have found our congressional delegation to be at 100% behind the efforts aimed at counting all Alaskans, and that includes pursuit of full and adequate funding. So again, wrapping up my formal comments, thank you for considering this resolution and for the questions you posed during the joint session 2 weeks ago. And most of all, thank you for supporting a successful 2020 count in Alaska. Now, to respond to a couple of the questions that I heard, it is our understanding, and we know that this is certainly a very flexible situation, but it's our understanding that the Senate Finance Committee put forward a $250,000 line item to support census activities on behalf of the state. And that, as many of you will recall, was removed from Governor Dunleavy's budget from Governor Walker's initial budget submission. So that's good news. Another question was about, you know, what members of the House and Senate can do in order to encourage participation. Lots of different things. Just reaching out to your constituents when you send out an email or make a Facebook post or write a newsletter. Just encouraging folks to know that the census is coming, and two, that actually participating in it is a really important step in ensuring that Alaska gets a fair distribution of those federal funds that are so important to our nonprofits and others. Also, you know, we've heard from one or two representatives who say that they're going to go knock door to door during the summer to make sure that people know about the census. Other opportunities include putting notice of the census in state publications and state emails and state applications, including the permanent fund application, not as part of the permanent fund, but we know that nearly every Alaskan gets that permanent fund application. So just a shout out that the census is coming and that it's good to participate would be really helpful. I do also want to point out that the Alaska Census Working Group is really ramping up our activities around outreach to the most rural and remote rural communities where the hardest count census tracts live and where the hardest to count populations live. So we're getting ready to start our work on a campaign that includes things like social media, includes websites, includes public radio advertisement, and one of our biggest outreach efforts is going to revolve around a post office box outreach campaign to those really difficult to count communities. And with that, I'll conclude my testimony, but I'm happy to answer any other questions that come up.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. Representative Drummond.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Walsh, for your testimony today. I'm not too clear on, you said a few minutes ago that the Senate Finance Committee set aside $250,000 in which budget, and what is the status of that number?
Well, it's our understanding that that was part of the Senate's operating budget, and so, you know, as it goes into committee, you know, I think I don't know if there was specific language about where that was supposed to go. We would be very encouraged if that not only supported state activity, but would help other stakeholder groups who are engaging in census outreach activities.
Did you follow?
Okay. I'm still not clear. I thought you said that it was in the previous budget and it was removed by Governor Dunleavy.
Right. Yes. Yes, I'm sorry. My apologies. Yes, it was in Governor Walker's budget, $250,000 line item to the Department of Commerce, which at the time was really ramping up to coordinate the activities of the Alaska State Complete Count Commission. But yes, that was removed from the Dunleavy budget.
Follow up. Please.
And is it necessary that we have this particular funding from the state in order to accomplish what we need to do?
Oh, absolutely. I think there have been a couple of studies nationally that highlight the importance of state support for funding census outreach activities, and everywhere from California, which is put forward, I think, you know, over $100 million to Washington, which has put in $15 million. If we did even the simplest math, ratio of our population to how much census funding could be adequate, we're looking at about $1.5 million. So $250,000 is really woefully inadequate, but we think any number is important for being able to ensure a fair and accurate count through those outreach activities.
Go ahead. Okay, thank you. Is there additional funding being raised from other sources?
Well, great question. Through the chair, the Alaska Census Working Group has put forward a budget of about $690,000 that really targets a lot of this outreach activity. We have been able to, with our stellar working group partners, the Cook Inlet Housing Authority, put forward well over $200,000 in in-kind support from both 4-Acre Group and Cook Inlet Housing. We've been able to attract about $175,000 from a national funder interested in a fair and accurate count. We are still seeking other dollars to help fill out that budget and help us do the activities that we've outlined. But yes, we're we're involved in trying to raise those dollars. You know, I think it's really important to point out that the work of the Census Working Group is really to supplement or should be to supplement the work of the state. We can't supplant it. You know, we can't just do all of the work. We really have to rely on a state that is investing in this work.
Okay, thank you for now.
Okay. Any other questions from members of the committee? Okay, well, we are going to open it up for public testimony. That was our...
I'm sorry.
Okay. So I'm going to gavel in to see if there's anyone who's public testimony on HJR 19. Okay, come on forward and give us your name and affiliation for the record.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Mary David. I am from Nome, Alaska, and I'm going to quickly show you where I'm from. It is right in this area of the state, so Northwest Alaska. I just want to say a few comments about the census and the importance of the census in our region, where costs are extremely high and the cost to build any infrastructure is extremely high. So any way that we are able to bring dollars to our region is important. But I also want to add the importance of, you know, the looking at this and the cost benefit of funding efforts on the census for our state will just have extreme benefit to our state and particularly rural Alaska. I just want to mention that in our region, we have formed a Bering Straits Region Complete Count Committee. And although you may see there's will be a cost to the state, many volunteers, organizations are supporting the census effort. So we're not totally relying on the state to ensure that, you know, we get an accurate count or as much of an accurate count in our region. I do want to add that I see the importance of developing regional complete count committees. And, you know, I applaud the efforts of a statewide effort. But each region is knowledgeable about what may work or what might not work in each of their areas. So having the regional complete count committees is extremely important. In our area, you know, the internet may not work very well. We have homes where we have multiple generations of families living in the home, so getting an accurate census is important. So I just want to just mention how important the census is to us in ensuring that an accurate census takes place. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Jackson.
Thank you. Yeah, the census has been going on every 10 years forever. And what I'm curious of is what the count was the last 10 years. So is it based on the count in the last 10 years where you're feeling like there was a big undercount?
There's about 10,000 residents that live within our region. So, and our population continues to increase. Uh-huh. So I believe it's important to ensure that an accurate count occurs. And I know that in order for an accurate count to occur, I think people need to feel comfortable in knowing what the census is, what benefit is it for me to participate? And if a stranger were to come knocking on my door, I don't know if necessarily that I would be so forthright in, you know, providing the answers that they may have to a question. One, because I may not know them, And how is this information that I give you going to be used? Mm-hmm. So I think the importance is education, ensuring that they feel comfortable in knowing that the information I'm giving you, what it's going to be used for. So to me, the census work starts long before the census actually occurs. In our region, we're trying to encourage people to look at the census jobs because they're going to feel a lot more comfortable talking to somebody within their own community.
So. All right. Thank you, Ms. David.
Thank you
for coming from Nome. I'm not sure if it's spring there yet. We had your mayor here a week ago telling us it's always spring in Nome. Is there anyone else for public testimony on House Joint Resolution 19? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close public testimony.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I feel what Ms. David just said to us, it's important that the outreach begin long before the actual counting begins. And I think it's important that we not delay this House Joint Resolution. People have said that resolutions don't have much impact, but both of our senators, U.S. senators, told us that they want to hear from us. They want to hear these resolutions. And since this is going to begin next January, just a few days after this second session of this legislature convenes, if we wait until next year to push this out, it will have no meaning. So I am inclined to move this script, House Joint Resolution 19 out of committee today and give the sponsor time to get it through the other House before we adjourn.
Representative Klayman, go ahead.
I've been fairly quiet because I support all this activity and support the resolution, and I didn't have questions, but I would say that moving the resolution today makes a lot of sense. I know oftentimes we hold things for more than one hearing, but I don't see a need here. Actually, a sign of the good work that the folks involved with promoting the census have done is they've actually been coming office to office, and they were by my office going through lots of details and the specifics of my district, and it actually reminds me, learning about it, how important actually it is, particularly for rural Alaska, to get this done. And so I would encourage us to move forward today, even though it may not be the typical path we follow.
Representative Rivak.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm just curious on a couple things. One, have we reached out to anybody from the Census Bureau, or have we heard from them, or are they available? And two, because mainly I'm interested to hear what they have to say about it. Two, I was confused. Was this a request of our, and maybe this is best for the sponsor, she's still around. And two, was this requested by the delegation? I'm confused there. Or did they just say they'd support something like this, or did they request this specific resolution? Or?
I do believe we have someone from the census in the room. I am not sure if Molly, can you address these questions? Can you come to the table? Okay. Okay, that's what I was wondering, because they're
happy to come to individual offices and answer questions.
So, okay. And
I don't know that I want to hold it or anything. I just want to make sure that the Census Bureau knows what we're doing and is in support.
The Census Bureau was present at the joint hearing so 2 weeks ago when Tribal Affairs and us, we met jointly, and they were in the room for that presentation. I don't believe, they did present. They talked about the hiring of local census workers, et cetera. Your question as to whether the resolution is at the request of the congressional delegation, I don't have an answer to, and I don't see the sponsor in the room.
Madam Chair.
Representative Drummond.
Yeah, the sponsor is chairing the Tribal Affairs Committee at this moment, and I don't see her staff remaining in the room either. So, unfortunately, we can't answer that question. But I do know that this is something that only happens once every 10 years. There is a lot of pressure to get this done and done right, and a resolution simply tells our congressional delegation that this is important to us, and I don't doubt that it is.
But this is
Representative
more.
Representative Rivak.
Okay. So this is more telling our executive branch, isn't it? That's a big part of this, is telling the governor that we want the legislature to work with him to augment the census. So I'm just kind of want to make sure I have this language right.
Well, I think if you go to the resolves, we are asking that we work with the executive branch agencies, the census working group, that we establish complete counts, that the legislature encourages every municipality, and then copies of it are sent to the governor, the municipal league, and the congressional delegation. My recollection from the hearing at Tribal Affairs is the difference this time around, that the census itself is always directly operated by the federal government, and that's funded. But what is different is that they are not funding any outreach efforts prior to the census. So although their instructions have changed, like you're going to get something in a post office box, you're not going to get a notification first to a post office box that says the census taker is coming, or this is your only opportunity to respond or go online. So the notification and alert to the communities is not being done by the federal census, and the state hasn't picked that up as an effort. Secondly, that translation to Alaskan languages is not being done of any of the census materials. And again, I think that in some years, my recollection is the federal government in some years has done some translation into indigenous languages, but they are not. And that the third point is that this is largely an online. So in some communities, it's going to be you get a notice at your mailing address to fill out the census material by going to a website. But people haven't done that before because that's not been the push, and there isn't prior instruction and allocation. So that was the idea of the community, the CCCs, the community census, complete community census. My dyslexia comes in. The CCCs, they're interchangeable. The complete count commissions in your community or region would tell you and get that information out. So that's where we're stuck, is we don't have state money to do it. The feds aren't doing those things, and the resolution is saying, everybody, we got to do something here.
Okay, I appreciate it. Again, I just wanted to understand the intent to make sure I had a complete understanding of the intent. So I wasn't in
Tribal Affairs
Committee, so thank you for that.
Representative Jackson.
Thank you, through the chair. Is the information that Josh is asking for available for him to see it? I think it is important. And I believe the federal government does advertise. I understand we're looking to do outreach in our rural areas in which the money will be spent to focus counting the people there. The federal government will start advertising, and they're advertising positions, jobs, that pays up to $31 an hour. So if we can, you know, focus people to check that out, get a job, then they can communicate the languages of their neighbors as well. Just leveraging what we have to make sure we get that good count.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if I collected this information during the joint hearing a couple of weeks ago, but the governor has already appointed the 2020 Census Alaska Complete Count Commission through Administrative Order 303. There are about 9 or 10 people on this commission, including the state demographer, Eddie Hunsinger, who did make a presentation at that joint event. I've got a ton of documents from that joint hearing that contains a lot of the answers, but I'm not totally familiar with it, so it wouldn't be fair for me to try to answer your questions based on 2 weeks ago. And the governor also issued Administrative Order 303 that establishes the 2020 Census Alaska Complete Count Commission. So our administration is on track. But if we need, and I think we need to find out where that funding is, but I don't think that has anything to do with the moving this particular resolution out today and getting it through the legislature before we adjourn.
Representative Reback.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll just, to be clear, I think we absolutely need to make sure that everybody's counted. I just, again, I wanted to make sure I understand the intent of this. And if all those documents were distributed from the previous committee, I must have overlooked them. I don't think I got any in this committee, and I wasn't, of course, in tribal affairs. So.
It was a joint committee meeting, and so I'm not... Yeah, we were there jointly with them. It was over in tribal affairs.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that.
But I believe that it was all recorded, so you could watch. And there were presentations from labor, the 4-acre group, the census working group. And I am sure, without looking directly at my staff or Representative Zilkowski's staff, that we can get you a set of the materials from that hearing. The handouts.
No worries. I can get them. I appreciate that.
Okay. Representative Tom. Yes. Staff is here. If we had questions for Representative Zilkowski, and everybody's telling me she's here, but I can't remember what the questions were. Did we have questions for Representative Zilkowski's office that we'd like to redirect? We pulled her out of tribal affairs. Representative Reback.
Sure. So I just asked if we had been working with the Census Bureau at all and if they were in support of this language. And just to be clear, I know that our federal delegation came up a couple times. Did they ask for this, or are they in support of this directly? Or
For the record, again, my name is Grace Singh, staff to Representative Zilkowski. Through the chair, thank you for the question, Representative Reback. The Census Bureau has been involved in the Census Working Group. We didn't have them testify because we would need to call the DC office for that, but they are very involved in the working group. They're invested in making sure that we do have a complete count in Alaska. So, yes. But on the federal delegation, we made them aware of this resolution. They were excited. They are also invested in ensuring that Alaska has a complete count for especially the federal funding formulas.
Thank you so much.
Any other question for the sponsor's staff? Okay. Thank you. We'll let you go back to tribal affairs. Sorry for pulling you out. Thank you for juggling it.
Did we get Ms. Singh's name on the record?
Yes, we did get her great name on the record. All right. What is the pleasure of the committee?
Madam Chair.
We're moving. Okay.
Madam Chair.
If I could have a motion, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Joint Resolution 19, version 31-L, S0738-S, out of committee.
With
individual recommendations.
Thank you. We'll take a moment to, is there any objection? Okay, then we're going to take... I have to see no objection. We're going to take an at ease to sign the paperwork. Next order of business today is House Bill 69, repeal of the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission. My intention for today is to hear the bill, take public testimony, and then we will set the bill aside. We do have invited testimony prior to public testimony. In your pocket for this bill, there are four fiscal notes from the Department of Administration. Additionally, last night, there were 19 additional letters that came in, and we did not print those for you this morning, but they are posted to BASIS. They're just not in your packets. I believe there are some letters in support already there. Kelly Hankey, legislative liaison for the Department of Administration, is in the room with us, and Commissioner Chewbacca is online. Commissioner, would you like to introduce yourself for the record and begin your presentation?
Hi, this is Kelly Chewbacca, the Commissioner for the Department of Administration. Thanks for having me with you today.
All right, and just so you know, Kelly is in the room and at the table as your lifeline. But go ahead.
Thank you. We're here to present today House Bill 69. This bill simply is intended to bring the statutes into compliance or bring them into alignment with the governor's proposed budget to rescind funding for the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission.
Do you have a further explanation or presentation? And I believe there is a copy in your packets and a memo. I'm going to call it a memo. That's not what's up.
Kelly, do you have the PowerPoint presentation there? Is that what you all are referring to?
Yeah. Do you need a minute?
No, I've got it.
Okay. Yes, she does have.
Kelly, can you walk them through the PowerPoint presentation? Our intention today is simply to inform you of some facts regarding the funding and the policy behind the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission to just inform you. And then you all are the policymakers and leave you to the decision about what to do with respect to the legislation. So this presentation that Kelly is giving you is simply some of the facts that we've gathered to inform your decision making. So Kelly, since you're in the room, it would be less clunky for you to walk them through the presentation than me, since I'm on a time delay on the video feed here.
Okay. Through the chair, this is Kelly Hanke, legislative liaison for the Department of Administration. And I'll just read this document to you if that's okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. Across Alaska, there's 183 rural and village communities that receive emergency notifications through the satellite service, Alaska Rural Communication Services, known as ARCS. It's made available via a contract between the Department of Administration and AT&T. These notifications include tsunami warnings, extreme weather, and child abduction alerts. The population of the 183 communities is approximately 102,291 people. Alaska Public Broadcasting, which is APBI, has managed ARCS and served the Department of Administration's source of satellite expertise. ARCS also is used to provide a mix of public and commercial television network content. FY19 funding for the satellite service is $879,500. Which includes the DOA and AT&T contract and some management contracts with APBI. The contract details between the state of Alaska and AT&T is internal to the DOA. For the three-year period from 2015 to 2018, there were 29 emergency alerts on ARCS. ARCS alerts are sent statewide regardless of the location of the emergency. There were 3 tsunami warnings, 4 amber alerts, and 22 extreme weather warnings. The total cost of the operating system from 2015 through 2018 was $3,809,500. On average, each alert costs $131,362. Of the 183 communities, 90 of those have more than one alternative way of receiving emergency alerts, such as symmetrical broadband service, fiber optic connectivity, and telephone. In addition, APBI has confirmed all 183 can receive emergency alerts via telephone. However, widespread distribution of the information will not occur as quickly or as effectively. Included with this document is also some graphs that kind of illustrate the same information, and I don't know if you need me to go through each one of those or not.
Go ahead and continue to walk us through this PowerPoint.
Okay. So on this first page, you have Alaska Public Broadcasting rural communities. The blue shows the Alaska population versus the rural community population of 102,291. The next slide shows the community sizes. The average is about 565 people per community. The largest one is Fort Wainwright, which has 7,374 people. The smallest is Bettles, which only has 13 people. And your median is about 237. The next slide shows your emergency alert. Oh, I'm sorry.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you. Before you move on, go back one to that ring.
To the ring? Okay.
Yeah. I'm not sure about the math here. Since we were just talking about the census, I don't know how the Department of Administration came up with this number. It says in the blue part, 736,239 people and 88%. It looks like our, according to the Department of Administration, Alaska's population just increased to 838,000 people approximately, if I'm looking at the numbers correctly on this chart. Care to elaborate?
Through the chair.
Or correct the numbers.
Through the chair, Co-Chair Drummond. So these numbers came from a different department to us. I would assume that these are probably older numbers, and we work directly with APBI to get a lot of this information as well.
Follow-up? Representative Drummond. So being that these are older numbers, and if I add the two numbers in this ring and get over 838,000 people, I don't think Alaska's population has been declining. I'd be really interested in the source of these numbers and an explanation of how this graph came to be.
Okay.
Please, this is the Department of Administration, and you're responsible for administering the entire state.
So, Representative Drummond, let me just clarify. You're concerned the number is undercounting the population or overcounting?
Over.
I'm concerned about what this ring represents because the numbers don't add up to me.
Yes, but my question is, because they do add up together to 838, but are you concerned that that is representing too few Alaskans or too many Alaskans?
It appears to be representing too many Alaskans.
Thank you.
I have
We'll go to Representative Reback, then Representative Thompson.
It seems to me that this number, while it appears as though it's wrong, this 736,000 could represent the entire population, and could that be where they forgot to subtract the orange portion of this pie chart?
Through the chair, Representative Reback, that could possibly be. Like I said, I'm not the one that actually created the slides, so I would have to go back and check.
Right. Thank you. Representative Thompson, did you have a question also?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On your next slide.
Oops.
I'm wondering about the Wainwright. You said Fort Wainwright. Fort Wainwright is completely within the city limits of the city of Fairbanks. Fort Wainwright is surrounded by the city population and the city limits of Fairbanks. I was wondering what Wainwright means there.
So, Ms. Hanke, I guess Representative Thompson's question is that Fort Wainwright or the village of Wainwright?
Right.
Through the chair, I apologize, Representative Thompson. It is the village of Wainwright.
Village of Wainwright. Okay, that's what I figured. Thank you.
And Madam Chair.
Representative Drummond.
According to this graph, it says that the village of Wainwright has 7,374 people. I don't think that's correct either. A quick Google search is showing me in 2010, the census enumerated that village as 556 people. I've got some serious concerns with the numbers in this PowerPoint, Madam Chair.
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, these numbers actually came directly from AKPBC as to who they service. So we can go back through and check with them on their numbers.
Follow up.
Thank you, Representative Thompson.
Could this possibly be the area around the village of Wainwright, maybe the whole north end of that? This particular site reaches that many people, with it centered in Wainwright, maybe? I'm guessing here.
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, that could possibly be. Like I said, we actually received these numbers directly from APB, AKPBC.
And they are going to testify today, so we'll be able to ask that question. Go ahead and proceed, Ms. Sankey.
Thank you. Okay, so this next slide is your emergency alerts by year. You've got 2015, 16, 17, and 18, and like I said earlier, these alerts reach everybody. They don't have a way to, if there's a weather warning in Nome, they don't have a way to just target Nome. Those alerts go out to everybody. And let's see. Emergency alerts by type. These are your tsunami warnings, your extreme weather, amber alert, and total alerts. I don't believe that these incorporate earthquakes. I could be wrong, but I don't believe that those include that. Your last slide, this is the Alaska Rural Community sites by population. These are the locations that Alaska Public Broadcasting gave us and the numbers of folks that they reach through their system. And I believe that's it.
Okay. Additional questions from Ms. Hanke at the Department of Administration. All right. Thank you. All right. Molly Kabler with the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission is here with us. Ms. Kabler, if you'll please come to the table, introduce yourself for the record, and begin your testimony. And you've heard some of the questions, so know those are coming.
All right. Good morning. I'm Molly Kabler. I'm the Executive Director of Alaska Public Broadcasting Incorporated, which is a small nonprofit, and we serve in as the executive service to the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission, which is the topic of HB 69. I think there's quite a bit of confusion here about the system, as we refer to it, and the information that we've been just discussing is about ARCS. ARCS is not under the purview of the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission, so this bill actually has no direct relevance to the ARCS system. ARCS is a low-powered television system owned by the state of Alaska, and the part that gets confused is that APBI, under contract with the Department of Administration, manages ARCS, but HB 69 is actually about the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission, which is in statute a group of 9 commissioners appointed by the governor that oversee the Alaska Public Broadcasting stations. So there's two different sets of systems here that we're talking about, and I think we have a fair amount of confusion. So there's 27 licensees of radio stations and television stations that are funded through the APBC, and the APBC is what's in statute. ARCS is something that we collaborate with and share some services, but the commission has no oversight of ARCS.
Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Kabler, for being here. Maybe I can sort of state my understanding of how these relate and the role of the commission, and you can correct or confirm or disconfirm my understanding. Does the commission, is its responsibility effectively to allocate resources among the licensees, among the public radio stations in Alaska, on sort of an equitable and rational basis?
Through the chair, Representative Christ Tompkins, that's exactly it. The main job of the commission at this point in time is to allocate the funding appropriated by the legislature to the 27 radio and television licensees.
Follow up?
Please.
And this is maybe more of a comment, but if this is helpful for other members, as I understand it, the role the commission plays is similar to the role the center or the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault plays in allocating and dispersing resources to the different domestic violence and sexual assault prevention organizations. So the legislature gives the money to one entity, and that one entity is then, which has domain expertise, is then charged with distributing those resources. I guess to put a question on that comment, could you speak to some of the sort of technical understanding required or entailed in figuring out where resources need to go and some of the considerations that the commission has to keep in mind?
Right. I think that's the key point here, is that the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission spends a significant amount of time understanding the system, what we call the system, the 27 licensees, how they serve their communities, how they work together, how do they receive federal funding, and how does that match or not match the state funding that comes through the commission. So the misunderstanding here today is often the case. It's a complex it's a complex system, and it's difficult to wrap your head around the fact that there are stations that serve very small populations and stations that serve fairly large populations, for example, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau. And the commissioners receive a lot of information, a huge annual survey, understanding all of the depths of what goes on at each of these stations, and then a couple of times a year a service report, so that they can really try and understand this, and when they get ready to do their appropriation work, they understand the consequences of what where those dollars go.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Jackson.
Thank you, through the chair. So you were saying there's a difference between ARC and the public broadcasting.
That's correct.
So are you referring to these previous slides, or?
Through the chair, Representative Jackson, I haven't seen these slides before. And while some of the community names are the ARCS communities, I didn't compile the population information. And I'm a little surprised, because although we work well together with the commissioner of the Department of Administration and the liaison, Kelly Hanke, this is not under the purview of the commission. So this isn't particularly relevant to the bill. And I think this demonstrates the problem, is that there's a lot of detail here, and it's, in my mind, the reason why we have the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission, is that those are 9 volunteers from around the state that understand what public broadcasting does in communities and spend their time and energy on that topic. And they don't actually work on ARCS or this ARCS information that's been presented by the Department of Administration.
Representative Clayman?
Isn't the whole point of this bill at some level really raising the question? I think the governor's budget stopped having any funding for the Alaska Public Broadcasting Corporation, and if we continue to fund Alaska Public Broadcasting Corporation, then this commission is actually set up to figure out how to distribute that those funds in an equitable and practical way, given the both the rural and urban realities of the state and the different funding levels and in those different communities.
Could you pull the mic a little
closer? Oh. And so if the budget is going to eliminate that funding, then basically getting rid of the commission and distributing what funds remain may make some sense. But if we're going to keep that funding in place, then it probably is in our interest to keep the commission. Have I got that right?
Through the chair, Representative Clayman, yes. At this point, the legislature, both bodies, have included funding in their budgets for public broadcasting. And so while this bill would represent a companion to eliminating funding, which was what was proposed by the administration, then it makes sense. At this point in time, with funding appropriated, I think the Department of Administration would suggest, and I don't get to speak for them, but that they need that we need the commission if there's going to be funding coming through.
Thank you.
Representative Jackson.
Thank you, through the chair. So if funding were cut in half, just to say, would you still need 9 commissioners?
Through the chair, Representative Jackson, yes, the process is, you know, regardless of the amount of money, the process will be the same for those commissioners and the work that they do.
Hello,
Representative Jackson.
So how many stations, radio and television, would you say the public broadcast covers?
There are 27 stations around the state.
Follow up.
Go ahead.
Are they all digital or some analog?
Through the chair, Representative Jackson, they are all broadcast licensees, licensed by the FCC, so they all have an over-the-air broadcast component. Many of them, I would say most, also have a digital stream as well.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Cabler? Cabler, thank you. All right, thank you for your testimony this morning. I'm gonna ask Ms. Hanke to come back and go through the sectional in the packet. There was a request, and there are 4 fiscal notes, so I don't know if you can address those also, but at least the sectional analysis. Before we turn, we do have a number of people signed up for public testimony, so we won't be done. And Ms. Hanke, thank you.
Thank you. Kelly Hanke, Legislative Liaison for the Department of Administration. And I'll have to see if I can. So on the sectional analysis, I don't know if that's in here. It's not on there. Sections 1 through 3 repeal state statutes establishing the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission and removes responsibilities from the Department of Administration pursuant to Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission activities. Section 4 provides that the Alaska Broadcasting Commission transfer all the assets to the Commissioner of Administration and allows the Commissioner to transfer the assets at no cost to the Alaska Nonprofit Broadcasting entities. Section 5 establishes an effective date of June 30, 2019.
And there are 4 fiscal notes. Can you speak to any of those? Or
through the chair, to the co-chair, I am not qualified to speak to the fiscal notes. I apologize.
That's okay. All right.
Through the chair, this is Commissioner Chewbacca. I can speak to these fiscal notes.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, I'm looking at the fiscal note that is, it says HB 69 has a mark of 2.036. So each of these fiscal notes assumes that we're repealing all the funding that we include for Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission. So Ms. Kabler was saying this bill only talks about the commission itself, but the commission carries all the funding for radio, television, and the emergency satellite service. We get all of it under the funding for the Public Broadcasting Commission. So each of these fiscal notes talks about the separate funds in particular. So 2.036, this one, they'll say in each of them if they're for the TV or for radio. This one, I'm sorry, I'm not seeing it offhand. Let me look real quick at the other ones. The 633, I believe, is for television. The 879 is for satellite. The one that's around 47 is for the commission. And then the 2036 would be for radio. So each of the fiscal notes is divided by the actual elements that we fund under the Public Broadcasting Commission.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any members of the committee? Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I've now became totally confused. I thought I knew what I was looking at, but I'm just real concerned. This particular bill is not eliminating the funding for public radio and public television. Is that correct? This is just to transfer it? That's where I got confused with it being transferred to the Department of Administration.
Commissioner, can you address that question?
Through the chair, that's correct, Representative Thompson. This bill would eliminate the commission itself and transfer any assets still within the commission over to the Department of Administration. But as Representative Klayman said before, the intent is that it goes in parallel with the proposal to eliminate all of the funding under the commission. And so there would be very minimal assets at this point that transfer into the Department of Administration. And so when we represent the fiscal notes as carrying all of these consequences, it's because it's supposed to be read in tandem with the other proposal.
Representative Thompson.
Just along those lines, Department of Division of Homeland Security through Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, they do the emergency management, ministers the emergency alert system, EAS, and I've read that the FCC mandates, it's a mandated function that we're supposed to do, and local primary stations or public radio stations, have you considered eliminating the satellite funding, how that will affect our emergency alert system, and would we be out of compliance?
Through the chair, yes, we have considered alternative ways of reaching these communities if we don't have satellite service. There's approximately 91 smaller communities that would only have emergency capability through something like a telephone. These communities do have a way of reaching them through telephone service only. Our other communities have other multiple ways of reaching them with emergency signals, like through fiber optic cables and other ways of reaching them. What we would have to do is work with DMVA or through DPS to develop emergency management plans for each of those communities. A telephone is obviously not as optimal of reaching a mass audience as a satellite signal, so we would have to work with those communities to develop emergency management plans for each community that's specific to those communities.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I'm a little bit curious also about the television side of it being unfunded, basically. Now we've got 100-some thousand people in the state that have no ability to see what's going on with our state legislature with gavel to gavel and things like that. Is that part of this, that you're going to eliminate that ability for those people to follow what's going on with the government and see what's happening in this state?
With this bill before you, is only talking about the actual commission and the group that Ms. Cabler runs and if they would be part of deciding who these funds go to. But, yes, the broader package is talking about eliminating the commission altogether and the state's funding of those funds. Altogether, what that would represent is a 17% reduction in funding for public broadcasting across the state. So not all funds for public broadcasting would be eliminated. Only 17% of our public broadcasting funds to the state would be eliminated. 83% would be preserved and local and federal funds. However, you're correct that these communities that are receiving the television service currently through the satellite fund that the Department of Administration has, if you're receiving your TV service through that satellite, you would no longer be able to receive that TV service if the legislature decides no longer to fund that satellite service.
Representative Thompson.
Commissioner, fiscal note number 4 is for a total of $879,500. I think this is the satellite connection. Is this... Can you explain that fiscal note and what we are eliminating here to knock it down by $879,000?
Through the chair, yes, I can. the $879, you'll see that the
$879,000.
Yes, $879,000 is for a contract that we had with AT&T, an annual contract we had with AT&T for satellite service. Approximately $719,000 was for the actual use of the satellite, and approximately $160,000 was for maintenance use or maintenance agreements we had to service the satellite. So if we terminate the contract on that satellite, we would it would come to the $879,500.
Representative Thompson, did you have one more follow-up?
Yes, I don't understand how eliminating that satellite ability to use that satellite is going to help anybody. I mean, we're a diverse state that is so many square miles and so distant between locations. I feel like this would be a disservice to anybody that was living in rural Alaska. This bothers me. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, through the chair, this is the number one question that I've received from legislators, which is why we had Ms. Hanke present those facts in that PowerPoint presentation for you all, so you guys could have the facts before you about who it benefits and what's provided, how many times we've used it, and why, because that is a really hard decision for you policymakers to make.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you. I understand on the alerts, the emergency alert system, but how about just for gabble to gabble? I mean, that television, I'm sure that connection must be utilized for that also, isn't it, in rural areas?
Through the chair, I would be speaking on a turn if I was to speak on what content is provided. I think that's a question that's better answered by Ms. Cabler.
And Ms. Cabler is nodding her head yes in the affirmative that ARCS does carry gavel to gavel as programming.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Jackson for the commissioner.
Thank you, through the chair. So you're saying ARCS carries gavel to gavel, but we were told PBS was a different... It's separate.
Yeah.
Entity. So it sounds like two different responsibilities, two different entities. So if ARP takes care of gavel to gavel, important things, what does the PBS, or am I misunderstanding something here?
Ms. Cabler, do you want that question answered by Representative, or by Ms. Cabler?
Yes, she can.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For the record, Molly Cabler, Alaska Public Broadcasting Incorporated. So the challenge here is that a lot of the services that we're talking about are created by one entity and distributed by another. Gavel to Gavel is created by KTOO here in Juneau. It is a part of the public television service through that is overseen by the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission. There are some funds that go to Gavel to Gavel. However, ARCS, which is not under the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission, also distributes that content as a service to Alaskans. ARCS itself is owned by the state of Alaska. So the public broadcasting entities are nonprofit organizations that create content and serve Alaskans. And ARCS is a distribution system that's separate from them but carries the content. And if I may say, this is the reason why the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission, as an entity that understands the integrated system, is of value.
Thank you. Any further questions for Ms. Cabler? All right, then I'm going to... we're going to take public testimony. We do have 19 people signed up for public testimony.
1.5 minutes.
So I'm going to open public testimony and ask if people could keep it under 2 minutes to a minute and a half. We should be able to get through most everyone. And the first person online to have signed up is Rachel Lord in Homer. Rachel, are you still lingering out there?
Hello, Madam Chair. Thank you. Yes, I am. And I want to thank the committee for the opportunity for public testimony on this bill. My name is Rachel Lord, and I am testifying in opposition to House Bill 69. I am a mother with a small child here at the LIO with me who's been very patient. I'm a small business owner, and I'm also a member of the Homer City Council. And I'm not speaking on behalf of the city or in my role as a city council member, but I will say that it is an incredibly important service that public broadcasting provides, not only for gavel to gavel so that we around the state can pay attention to what's happening down there in Juneau during the legislative session, but also here locally. I'm astounded at the number of people throughout the community that listen to city council meetings and provide me with feedback as a result of listening to those council meetings. And I want to be really clear that that is an across the board, in my experience, people from every shade of the political spectrum are tuning in to listen to our council meetings and understand what's happening, as well as our borough assembly meetings. I also want to share that a couple months ago, we held an all-hazards training by FEMA and Texas A&M University here locally. And there were all the stakeholders, major stakeholders in the room. We had over 40 participants. And local public radio was a major player there, talking about communications and response in the event of any number of different hazards, both natural and man-made, that we might experience here. So in all communities, big and small, rural and urban, public broadcasting is incredibly important. Suggesting that we spend time and money recreating the important value that they provide currently seems irresponsible at best. So to finish up, I strongly oppose House Bill 69. I believe it's completely unwise to divest from a critical and wide-ranging statewide tool that leverages local and federal support to assist in the response to disasters and helps engage Alaskans in local and state government. I encourage you to not pass this bill out of committee, and I do thank you all for your service.
All right, thank you. The next person to have signed up is Mike Coons in Palmer.
Yes, ma'am. My name is Mike Coons. I'm the president of the Greater Alaska Chapter at AMAC. We have 200 members strong here in the Valley and Anchorage area. AMAC statewide, 4,500. All of us are conservative seniors and fully support Governor Dunleavy's budget. We fully support HB 69, which fully repeals FPBS funding. Why? We are in a $1.6 billion deficit because of runaway spending by the legislature over far too many years. Besides funds from the state, $3.5 million, funding comes from federal through Corporation of Public Broadcasting, local, tribal, and private entities. Pick, click, and give is one way Alaskans give. Skimming from their permanent fund dividends. By the way, lower the PFD, less the PBS. We need to join the other 14 states that leave PBS to getting grants and donations from private entities. As to ARC and Gavel to Gavel, they get donations from other people. Those people are listed all the time on their shows. Do the right thing, move out of committee, unlike your past actions on other governor's bills. Thank you.
All right. Our next testifier is Carl Berger in Anchorage.
Yes, this is Carl Berger. I actually do serve on the Public Broadcast Commission, but my testimony is for myself only. I am wanting to inform your committee that we have over the years raised funds for public broadcasting from many sources, as was previously stated, but the amount of money that the state puts in for the stations is very important in terms of obtaining federal match for replacing equipment for the stations, many of whom are 40 and 50 years old and have equipment that has ended their useful life and needs to be either repaired or replaced, and the loss of state funds would prevent stations from being able to do that. It is also transferring power of the key broadcasting decisions and funding to the executive branch, to put the system under the Department of Administration's control, and it would change the statewide geographic representation that now exists on the Alaska Public Broadcast Commission, which has worked very well over the years, providing all kinds of input from members of the commission from around the state to operate the system. So I would very definitely speak in favor of continuing the system and of not proceeding with House Bill 69. Thank you for the opportunity to present my point of view.
Thank you, Mr. Berger. Our next testifier is Bill Tremblay in Petersburg.
Hi, this is Bill Tremblay in Petersburg. I am a board president for a local radio station, KFSK Public Radio. I do not support HB 69 for several reasons. Just to note, we are a community of about 3,200 people, and we currently have almost 1,200 people noted as members, paying, subscribing members to our radio station. We have a lot of support here. Noting that the governor, when in his transmittal letter, noted that the function of the commission can be accomplished utilizing non-governmental entities that can be attuned to be more responsive to local broadcasting needs of the community. Saying that is one thing. Identifying what those are is totally something different. I know our program manager does a huge job of trying to coordinate and increase funding through different grants and all that kind of stuff, and just blowing this off saying that it can be done elsewhere I don't think is useful. Knowing for a fact that the governor doesn't support public broadcasting and stated it so in his campaigning, I know that this is just carrying forward his ideas of just eliminating this altogether. Reducing the commission, as was noted, is just part of his total defunding of all the public broadcasting. And as a reminder, during the Walker administration, we've already had to absorb a 48% reduction in state fundings to our local stations, which has increased our need for fundraising. The state levels, as identified for this year, only represent 16% of what our total station budget is. However, it's a critical component in meeting our federal matches, which we probably won't do without the state funds. I would just have to say that the commission's important in understanding how things move across the state and for allocating funds to all of our resources here. We consider our local radio station as an essential service and would hate to see this lost any more than it is. It's also very disappointing to have the administration come in and talk about the elimination of the commission and the support for especially rural areas without having anything in place as for a replacement for any type of emergency responses. I think it's a bit irresponsible.
Mr. Tremblay, can you wrap up, please?
Not noting. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Russell Lyman and Haynes, you'll be next.
Yeah, hello. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee, for allowing me to testify. I'd like to testify. My name's Russ Lyman. I'm calling from Haynes. For myself here, testifying against House Bill 69. APBC works to understand the needs of the stations of the public broadcasting service and make decisions around funding and helping keep things system running efficiently. And that's vitally important as the public broadcasting provides public safety information as well as local information, such as our local station broadcasts our borough assembly meetings. For the communities, both communities it serves. Especially public safety information is especially vital for rural communities throughout the state. And so I ask that you block House Bill 69. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you. The next person will be Rebecca Myers in Sitka.
Hello.
Yes, I'm Rebecca, and I am a part of the Sitka community. I'm also a part of the radio station here, KCAW. I am calling in strong opposition to the House Bill 69. I think that, you know, there's a primary misunderstanding around what public broadcasting does, and I think that destroying the infrastructure that makes it possible for us to share all the information and emergency information that we need to is short-sighted, and I am a strong supporter of public broadcasting in general, and I would urge you not to pass this bill out of committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today, and thank you for supporting all of our rural outlying communities that rely on the ARC system.
Thank you, Ms. Myers. Our next person is Charlie Wibber, also in Sitka.
Yes, greeting, Madam Co-Chair, and the House community on regional affairs. This is Charlie Wilbur speaking from Sitka. I'm speaking solely for myself. I am firmly against House Bill 69. Maintaining the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission is essential to protecting the economic health and vitality of public broadcasting in Alaska. Doing away with the commission would be the first chink to eliminate public broadcasting in our state. We must maintain it. Here in Sitka, we depend on public radio to keep us informed of local, state, and legislative news. Very important. Please repeal HB 69. Thank you for your time.
Okay, our next person is Kari Birdsell in Talkeetna.
Yes, my name is Kari Birdsell. Good morning. I serve on the board of directors of KTNA Community Radio. I noticed that Representative Christ Tompkins is the only member of your committee who lives away from a large population center. Sitka is 8 times the size of Talkeetna, but I'm sure he has shared how important KCAW is to his community. And it's a similar story in all rural areas. Local news, public safety, public access, unifying community, and so many little things that make up day-to-day life. I know that public broadcasting helps many of you campaign for office. All this would be gone without local community radio. Community radio also connects our state. Thanks to Alaska News Nightly, we get to hear from Emily Hofstetter, KNOM in Nome, Renee Gross from KBBI in Homer, Robert Woolsey from KCAW in Sitka, and so many more. And we get support. Elizabeth Harbaugh came to Talkeetna to teach us more about interviewing skills. Crack engineers show up and get us back on the air on a prayer until we can get the proper equipment to fix whatever has gone wrong. Public broadcasting in Alaska does not pay for itself. It costs the state less than 0.03% of its budget, and communities triple that investment with member pledges, volunteer time, and other grants. But we need that state money to leverage the other money. I know this legislation does not expressly kill public broadcasting in Alaska, but it's a pretty sizable nail in our coffin. I urge this committee to advise the executive branch that repealing the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission is against the best interests of our great state. Communities are what make this state, and public broadcasting performs great service to connect individual committees and our communities to connect the state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We're going to go to the far west next. Frank Kelty, mayor of Unalaska, in Unalaska this morning.
Good morning, Madam Co-Chair and members of the committee. It is spring in Unalaska, but just passing on, we're totally opposed to HB 69. I think I concur with the co-chair's statement that she's going to hold this bill. It seems like I've been saying that a lot this session, that the bill should be held. But public broadcasting is very important to Unalaska. It's our link to the emergency alert system. We work closely with our local public safety department in order to get emergency information to our community. Unalaska is on the Ring of Fire. We're a coastal community that has seen numerous earthquakes. We have tsunami drills quite frequently when there is an earthquake in the Gulf of Alaska or in the Aleutians, and so we need this local service that our local station provides. The city of Unalaska also supports our local station. We give a grant of over $100,000 to to our local station. And it would be, by losing funding to this program, you would be crippling our station. Unalaska would have no access to National Public Radio because we're too far west to receive satellite programming from their from the NPR satellite. We'll be no longer be able to receive programming for the Alaska Public Radio Network. The statewide emergency system would suffer. We rely on statewide satellite services for several of our emergency alert channels. And, you know, I heard one comment that the alerts cost $100,000 per alert. Well, if we, I think that's a small price to pay if you can save one person or 10 people by getting an alert out to the community in the event of a tsunami coming or an ice breakup flooding and things like that. So I would urge you to keep this HB 69 on hold. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The next is Lynn Davis in Juneau.
Hello?
Lynn Davis? Go ahead.
Hello?
Turn your radio off.
Oh, hi, here. This, okay, turn it. We are, sorry, I'm usually, I'm there, but I'm home now. Good morning, and thanks for listening to the public. The quest to abolish public broadcasting, it's making the rounds of state capitals. And here it is on us. It's HB 69 is a democracy alert. Public TV and radio need to be separate from politics. None of us want state-run Alaska broadcasting. If HB 69 passes, we will need Voice of America to let us know what is really going on. Here we are after 50 years of attacks on public broadcasting, and PBS and NPR continue to win bipartisan congressional funding support every year, and it was great to learn that both Alaska bodies have preserved the funding. It is a tsunami alarm for Alaska that certain political leaders continue to wage war against public TV and radio. There is no reason to pass HB 69. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next testifier would be Maureen Longworth, also in Juneau.
Hello. Hello, representatives. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. I'm a 29-year Alaskan physician. I've practiced medicine from Ketchikan to Bethel. Like most Americans, in repeated surveys over the past 30 years, I also rely on PBS to deliver nonpartisan facts by radio and television. It's good for our community, our health, our home, education, and therefore our schools. It gives all families equal access, and at the same time, it supports our local communities with local news, safety messages, public health warnings, and community social news. Personally, I've participated and been known for my championing of community outreach, cancer prevention, palliative care, public health education, and patient rights in my time as a physician. I started with the Cancer Connection, sponsoring women's health forums that went from being a 30-person attending on a weeknight to taking over Centennial Hall with over 500 attendees in Centennial Hall on Saturday afternoons, all about cancer prevention and what we can do for our health. I think that without public radio inviting us on to talk about these little events that are just percolating in our community, the little ideas that individuals have to share, the many qualities that individuals in a local community have to share, these kind of activities would not mushroom into the awareness they are today, where people are profoundly affected by the awareness of education they receive through the word of public radio. In their commitment to nonpartisan broadcasting, PBS expands our exposure that way. And whereas partisan broadcasting would be a restriction of democracy,
So eliminating Alaska's Public Broadcast Commission and funneling funds through a partisan-appointed Department of Administration takes away our nonpartisan management of a public service.
You can you please wrap up?
You cannot have partisan appointees in the Department of Administration holding purse strings in a competing market. So please stop HB 69 and vote instead to preserve our democracy. Vote against HB 69. Thank you so much.
All right. Our next testifier is Mark Springer in Bethel.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chairman and Committee. Mark Springer calling from Bethel. I am speaking on my own behalf. I'm a consumer of broadcast media. I'd like to really quickly answer Representative Jackson's question. Broadcast radio in the public broadcasting system here in Alaska is traditional AM broadcasting and FM broadcasting. So, yeah, you would call it analog. And the television station here in Bethel does broadcast in digital with four channels, as is required by the FCC now. The nice thing about analog radio is that I can leave town, and you know, Bethel, YK Delta, we are a summertime, actually year-round traveling society, fishing, hunting, gathering, and you can take a small $10, $20 transistor radio with you, and as long as your batteries are good, you can receive a radio station from Bethel, from Nome, wherever. So public broadcasting is important because it serves as a kind of a blanket, as a quilt that covers the state. And the Public Broadcasting Commission, which I am fully in support of maintaining, are the quilters that help keep that system tied together. So I am opposing House Bill 69. I encourage chair and the committee to keep the bill in committee for further study. Legislators have historically understood and contributed to meeting the needs of every Alaskan, knowing how far-flung we are and how isolated we are by helping support a robust public broadcasting system, and we really appreciate that. And if you've never heard a basketball
game... Can you wrap up, Mr. Springer?
Yeah, you bet. If you've never heard a basketball game called the Yupik, you don't know what you're missing. Thank you.
We all miss Mr. Active. Hans James in Fort Yukon, you'll be next. And Hans James in Fort Yukon.
Okay, good morning. And I'd like to say thank you for listening to me. I would like to oppose HB 69 and voice my support for the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission. And broadcast radio is an essential service, and they are part of that service. And here, the Alaska Broadcast Radio Service is anywhere from messages to news, the weather, alerts. Springtime right now, it's a river watch, flood watch, and we've had a great need for fundraising for the radio stations up here in Fort Yukon, and we are working on that. I would just like to voice my oppose to HB 69. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. James. We still have five people signed up for public testimony, but we are getting to the bewitching hour and we'll need to adjourn. So we're going to hold public testimony open to our next meeting on Thursday. And we did have a question for Commissioner Chewbacca if you are still online.
I am still online.
Okay. Commissioner, if you could clarify, and I'm reading a note from a committee member who left, can you clarify fiscal note number 4 for $879,000, is that used to pay for the emergency notification for rural Alaska or not?
Yes, that is.
All right. Thank you very much. Representative Jackson has a question for you.
Thank you, through the chair. Is the majority of public broadcasting paid federally?
Through the chair, I would love for you to confirm this with Molly Kabler, but my understanding is that the majority of it is not paid federally. The majority of the funds are raised locally, but substantially subsidized federally. But I think Ms. Kabler would know better.
And Ms. Kabler has returned to the table. Ms. Kabler.
Thank you, Molly Kabler, Alaska Public Broadcasting Incorporated. So it's, yes, the funding for each station is different depending on the size of the station. There's significant federal funding, local funding, and state funding. It's a complement of all three that funds each station. Very small stations, a larger percentage of their budget is federal funding because there's only so many people in the community to raise money from. The larger stations, the majority of funding is local funding, local members and local businesses.
Representative Jackson.
Follow up, thank you. So if the state cuts its funding, maybe not fully cut it, then the stations would be able to continue to move on.
Every station's complement is a little bit different.
Could you state your name again?
Sorry, Molly Kabler, Alaska Public Broadcasting Incorporated. So through the chair, the answer is if the funding from the state of Alaska is cut, the impact is that matching funds from the feds are reduced. At which point do we come to the tipping place where a station's no longer viable? That's going to vary station by station. So if you cut the public broadcasting funding, it is going to have an impact. We've already faced cuts in fiscal year 16 and 17, and it just means the service is diminished. Whether they will go away or not, I can't predict station by station. I would tell you the larger stations, their state component of funding is small, and they'll continue. But the smaller stations continue to be hurt by this reduction in state funding.
Thank you.
All right. So we are going to hold public testimony open, and we will continue that on Thursday, May 9th, our next meeting. And we're going to call the meeting adjourned at 10:01 a.m.